So did you get another chance to listen to it again, or?
Yeah, I listened to it twice.
Oh, well, good. So you should be ready this morning.
Yeah, you'd think that.
All right, well, let's get right into it, because I got other things I want to talk about, too.
Okay.
Let it be.
All right, so welcome to another edition of Long and Winding Show. This is Jay, Mix on the other side. We took a little bit of a vacation last week due to my ears, and we are back this week with our review of Venus and Mars, the 1975 Wings album, which is the follow-up to Band on the Run. This album has a new lineup again. And let me just get the people here. We got Jimmy McAuliffe, Joe English, and Jeff Britton joining the band on guitars, percussion, and drums, respectively. So we'll get into it in a minute. But I wanted to ask you a question that's been burning my mind the last couple days. Hope you can answer it. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Why doesn't The Who get a little more respect? I don't think we hear about them enough like we do the Beatles, the Stones, Zeppelin, Pink Floyd. I mean, they should be in that conversation for sure.
I think it might be because they just won't die gracefully.
You mean they keep coming back?
Yeah, they're still on their final tour. I think this is like final tour number 12. Actually, probably more than that, like 22.
Do you think they just don't got it anymore?
I think it's a shame that Pete and Roger are still touring under the Who name. I really think they should have retired the Who name after John Entwistle died.
I agree with that.
And so I don't know. I think it's just people might be taking them for granted. I think Pete Townsend still gets a lot of respect, but I don't know about Roger, just because his voice just does not sound good anymore, and I think people just don't want to pay attention to it. They'd just rather turn a blind eye to it or a deaf ear to it.
Well, I think Pete can still sing, though.
Yeah, he's losing his range, too. But I think he gets more respect just for a guitar player, because he can still kick butt on stage.
Oh, for sure. But what about as a songwriter? I mean, he is a fantastic songwriter.
Yeah, he is.
And why doesn't he get a little more respect like Lennon, McCartney, and Jagger and Richards?
Do Jagger and Richards get that much respect as songwriters?
I think they do. I mean, you know, they've written some classic rock songs.
Yeah, but I never really hear about their songwriting, though. It's just them as performers or them as personalities.
Well,
and I think Pete Townsend rubs a lot of people the wrong way, especially rock critics, because I think he's rather acidic or acerbic.
I mean, even when he came out with his biography several years ago, I don't think he got a much airplay off of that.
Yeah.
I don't know, I just want to bring them back into the mix. I mean, they're coming to the JLA in September, October, and I've seen them without Entwistle, and they were, you know, like you said, Roger's not there anymore. But Pete can still bang that guitar, man. He's just fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he still looks great. He just looks great up on stage, too. He just looks great.
And as you and I talked a little bit last night, I've been listening to The Who by Numbers, which I heard again today for like the fifth time. I just think it's a fantastic album, and you never hear anything about that album at all.
Well, it's a Kenny Jones album, that's why.
No, that was 1975.
Oh, was it? Oh, okay,
yeah.
Never mind.
Yeah, it came out before Who Are You. Squeezebox is on it. That's the big hit.
Yeah, and You Better You Bet, right?
No, that's on It's Hard or Face Dances, one of the two.
Oh, it must be Face Dances. It's not on It's Hard. I guess I'm confusing Face Dances and Who by Numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. I remember Keith Moon's on the cover of Who by Numbers.
It's the
so
cover.
It's not Kenny Jones.
The cover is drawn by John Entwistle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just a cool album. I guess with that being said, in 1980, we've talked a little bit about this, but in 1980, Pete Townsend releases Empty Glass, which is by far, you know, it's a perfect album.
Mm-hmm.
You never hear anything about that anymore. And it's not available on iTunes. You can't get it on Spotify. I looked it up on Amazon just as a lark to see if it would actually come up to buy the actual CD. And it says you can buy a digital download. I don't know who it's from. And you can buy the CD still. But I never hear anybody mention that record anymore. And the big hit off that was Let Your Love Open the Door, which still gets moderate airplay. What do you think about it? I mean, that album is fantastic.
Yeah, it is. I got it on gold. I got the gold CD of it.
I think we should be talking about that album more, too, as people, I mean, people in general. I mean, that album is pretty damn perfect. With that being said, I guess my question to you is, how about we do Empty Glass in 2 weeks?
Okay.
What do you think?
Sure.
I think we just take a little breather and we talk about another great album and get people to maybe listen to it again. Sound good?
Yep.
All right, we'll do it after Speed of Sound then, right before we get into London Town, which is near the end of the Wings discography. All right, so let's get into Venus and Mars now that we've taken a departure. What did you think overall before we get into song by song?
Last time I was boldly saying that I might like this album more than Band on the Run, just based on the track list. Based solely on the fact that I've heard all these songs from Wings Over America, which is one of the first McCartney solo albums that I ever bought. And having said that, I guess I have to temper being so brash and say that having listened to the entire album, I kind of don't think it's better than Band on the Run. So everybody who said what last week can now say I told you so this week.
What left you with a bad feeling about it?
I didn't. There was a lot about the recording that I didn't like. I still like the songs, but hearing the studio versions did not improve them. I'm still partial to the live version. I think there's a lot of they played around in the studio too much, adding little fiddly bits to it.
What did you think about the two songs that were a departure from? The two songs that allowed McCartney to step in the background and just be a musician and let somebody else sing lead. Do you think those songs were okay?
Yes and no. I'm already used to those songs because they're on Wings Over America. But one of the recordings I did not really care for. I should just say Spirits of Ancient Egypt. I did not really care for the studio version of it.
But you like it as a song.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's got really stupid lyrics. And I was hoping, just because it has a different vocalist, I was hoping it was because it was written by that guy, and I could blame the stupid lyrics on that guy. But no, the lyrics are by Paul, so Paul's responsible for those really stupid lyrics.
Now, you know I'm going to get a text message from a certain disgusted family member now that you said that.
Really? What, somebody's going to defend the lyrics and
Spirits of Ancient Egypt? No, somebody's going to agree with you and say that he's been saying that for the last 30 years of my life.
Oh, yeah.
So, and he'll listen to this show in another 4 or 5 weeks. So when he gets to it, don't send me the text message. I'm well aware how you feel. Just want to preface that now. All right, well, let's get into the first song. But I just want to say this album is pretty much a straightforward rocker, except for the ending that I think he goes a little poppy and nostalgic there at the end. But we'll get to him. Venus and Mars, what'd you think as a song?
I like it. I like the song, and I think it's a really cool way to lead off the album, waiting on the steps of the sports arena, or sitting on the steps of the sports arena, waiting for the show to begin, and then it leads right into the show. It's really cool. I saw there was a review on AmericanSongwriter.com that was hoping that McCartney would someday build up this song into a full, you know, two verse and a chorus type song, and that's kind of intriguing. It would be kind of interesting to hear this blown up into its own song, but as it is, I think it's pretty cool. I like it.
Yeah, I think it starts out good with that acoustic, and like you said, good imagery, good harmonies in there, and then it just rocks right into a rock show, which is a good thumping, vocally rocking song. One, two, three, four. a lot of good references. I like the Jimmy Page throw out there, Madison Square Garden,
and the Hollywood Bowl.
Right.
It's kind of hard to go to a concert and not think of these two songs when you're walking across the parking lot heading toward the entrance.
Yeah, and he played it the whole Wings Over America tour. It's how he opened the tour, which is also cool. I like the line, "You score an ounce," which will come in, which he will live that that lyric in a couple years when he gets arrested trying to get in Japan. The guitar rocks. I like how kind of in the middle he starts talking with that British accent, and then he just kind of rocks it up again. The ending's cool. It's got that piano thing, and then he starts saying, "Oh, you want to go to the rock show? Come on, get your dress on." I just think that's kind of a cool way to end it, because they're going into the show. Yeah, I like this 1-2 punch a lot. Are we in agreement? This is a big thumbs up.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So then he goes into "Love in a Song."
Okay, one more right away. This is the one. 1-2.
What'd you think of that?
This is one of those recordings that I don't know what it is, but when I'm listening to it, I'm thinking, "Wow, this is a nice song." And then when it's over, I completely blank on what it sounded like.
Really?
Yeah, and I've played this song several times, and each time just to refresh my memory, or to actually cause a memory, and while I'm sitting there listening to it, it's like, "Wow, this is a really nice song. How come nobody talks about this song anymore? This is really nice." Or talks about this song at all. And then after it's done, I'm thinking, what did it sound like again? What was the melody? I can't remember it. But I do remember liking the song. But I don't know why. I do know why. It was a nice melody. But for the life of me, I could not hum that melody to you.
Yeah, I like it too, but I always remember it. Because I like it a lot.
Yeah, and of course you could say that it's my age. And it's just that I'm used to the other songs because I've heard them so often. But the last song, "Treat a Gently Lonely Old People," I hadn't heard before I listened to this album in preparation for this podcast. I remember what "Lonely Old People" sounds like, so you can't say it's an age thing.
Right.
It's, for some reason, there's something buried into the recording of "Love and Song" that just does not trigger my memory, and I think some scientists should look into it and maybe do it, find something for Alzheimer's research or something.
There you go. I like the vocal. It has a good feel to it. It's kind of a ballad, but maybe it's not. I don't know. I like the "Happiness in a Homeland" lyric. On a whole, I really like this song, and I kind of look forward to it after Rock Show. It kind of gives you a little breather, and then you get into "Love and Song," and it's just a cool song. I mean, yeah, I could hum it for you, but I'm not gonna torture our audience with it.
It was a good vocal too. Paul sounds really good singing it.
Definitely good.
That little snatch of lyric that you said triggered my memory. So there you go.
Yeah, that kind of pulls you back into it, I think. I like this song a lot. So now we're going to roll on to "You Gave Me the Answer." You got to have something to say about that.
I like this song.
You gave me the answer to love.
I bet a lot of people hate it, but I like it. I really like it. I mean, it's obviously a throwback to the Rudy Valley type, vaudeville type song, but I like it. It's a nice melody. It's very catchy, and I have no complaints at all about it.
Kind of throws it back to Honey Pie a little bit, doesn't it?
I think this is better than Honey Pie.
Yeah, probably. But I mean, it's that old time song again that John hated when Paul would write.
Yeah, it's definitely the same style as Honey Pie, but I think this is a better song than Honey Pie.
I like it too. I wrote down, of course, John would hate it because it's a grandma song. I like the vocal too. I like the sound of his voice, and I like the "Shall we dance?" Question there in the middle. And I think, if I'm remembering correctly, in Wings Over America, which Rock Show was the movie from that tour, Wasn't there pictures of Fred Astaire up on the screen when he played this?
I don't remember, but I do know he dedicated it to Fred Astaire, but I don't remember what Rock Show looked like. I only saw it once. I did see it recently, but I don't remember details like that.
You see it on Blu-ray?
I saw it on HD because Access TV showed it.
How'd it look?
It looked good.
It looked really good. Did it sound good?
Oh, yeah. It sounds better than it looks just because film in those days wasn't fast enough to shoot a dark concert. So it still looks dark, but it's probably the best it's ever going to look on Blu-ray or on HD.
So that being said, so Access probably showed the full movie, right?
I'm pretty sure.
Okay. Because PBS, in their infinite wisdom during their pledge drive, decided to show an abbreviated version of Rock Show, which was a travesty in itself, so they could put in more pledge breaks and hock all their bonus materials they want to give you to pledge. So I'm calling you out, PBS. It was a bad idea to chop the movie up. That's not all I got to say about that. That's my soapbox on that. Magneto and Titanium, man. What'd you think?
I like this song, too. I really like the bouncy electric piano. But it just doesn't sound like... If you said that Paul McCartney wrote a song about Marvel supervillains, you wouldn't think that it would sound like this.
What do you mean?
I would think that it would sound like Iron Man, you know, big and bold and exciting. And this is kind of like a bouncy little dance tune. But I like it.
I called it a subtle rocker. I think it's a little subtle rocker. And I think he kind of tears it up in the middle there, you know, vocally. The Star Criminal line. Yeah, I like this too, but I like the guitar solo there in the middle too. I think that's good. I think it's a short song. It's not a lot to it, but I'm giving it a thumbs up. I don't think Paul is able to write a song like Iron Man. I mean, it's just not his style. I mean, I'm not a big Black Sabbath fan. I don't know where you come down on them. What do you feel about them?
I know very little about them.
Yeah, I'm not. We're definitely not going to do a Black Sabbath podcast.
I hope not.
But I like this song. I think it's good. And this was also on Wings Over America, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is strange.
Pretty much this whole album was on Wings Over America, except for two songs. Two songs and an instrumental.
Yeah. All right. So we like this one, too. So we're doing good so far. So this unnamed family member says we've come down on 50-50 on how we feel about his solo song so far. I don't think it's quite 50-50. But
I wouldn't say that either, but I know I'm more critical about it than you are.
For sure.
But I just don't... I really don't care for albums from the 70s at all. I just don't like the way they were recorded back then.
So it's not the songs, it may be how they were recorded and mixed in the studio.
Yes, and also Paul's had problems with his solo stuff. We've already discussed that he's had two iffy albums out of four, five.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to get back to that at the end. I want to talk about that at the end again. Letting Go, what'd you think?
Good. I like it. I like the song on the whole, but I especially like the horns.
Wow.
I really like the... And I was last night when we were having our family dinner, I kept wanting to whistle the horn part to myself, and I kept having to stop because I knew you would recognize it.
See, now that's funny. Now we're going to disagree on this. I think the horns might take away a little bit from the rough, rocking song that this is.
Really? Oh, I love the horn part. I love it. It makes the song for me. And Paul's vocal is excellent, too.
Oh, yeah. He sounds great on this. This, the bass thumps, you know. I like it all. I like this whole song. There's a line I wrote down, and my handwriting is so terrible I can't read it. I liked one of the lines a lot. Yeah, I like that. I like it's kind of a rough rocker, you know, with that guitar. That guitar is just fantastic. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I kept. The horns kind of took me out of it because I just thought this was kind of like it's a little bit like this, like McCartney doing a hard rock song, and then we got the horns in. I don't know. I mean, I still like the horns, but I'm just trying to be a little critical.
Yeah, but these are hard rocking horns too. It's not like they're not like jazzy horns.
Well, I know.
These are down and dirty horns.
Right. I'm gonna listen to it again.
And speaking of lyrics, Rolling Stone singled out one of the lines in Letting Go. They really hated the "she looks like snow, I want to put her in a Broadway show" line. And I kind of have to agree. That's pretty awkward.
Well, I guess now I can read my handwriting. I like the line, "she tastes like wine." That was a line in there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like that lyric. Well, you know, screw Rolling Stone.
Yeah, Rolling Stone hated this album. They hated it right from the get-go. But it sounds, reading the review, they hate the fact that Paul is constantly singing about Linda and trying to rub it in about what a great relationship he has with his wife. Like, they're paragons of married life and everybody should follow them. And it just sounds like Rolling Stone just broke up and they're really bitter. And it just sounded like they had personal problems apart from the problems they had with the album.
Well, considering he gave them an exclusive interview, no, that was Life, but he did give an interview to Rolling Stone in the early 70s, didn't he? I thought he did.
He must have. I'm sure he's done interviews with Rolling Stone throughout.
And he just did one not too long ago, a big spread in there when the cover of the magazine had him playing the smallest harmonica I've ever seen. I mean, yeah, he's done a lot for the magazine over the years.
Yeah, it's surprising because they hate him. they seem to slag on him constantly.
We're going to get into the Venus and Mars reprise. What'd you think?
I did not know that this was on the album, but I thought it was a cool way to start the second half. It got kind of sci-fi and spacey.
That's what I liked about it.
Yeah, I'm iffy about the sound effects, though. But it does lead nicely into Spirits of Ancient Egypt.
Yeah, that's what I like, too. I thought the lyrics were cool. I like how he takes us into space, and the imagery was really cool. And I think, if I'm remembering the Man on the Run book, which we talk about all the time, I think there was a bit in there about Gene Roddenberry wanting Wings to do some kind of music for a Star Trek musical that he was trying to produce for the stage. And it didn't work out. They didn't do it, obviously, and the stage show never materialized. But this song was the reason why he thought McCartney could write some music for this Star Trek stage show.
Huh.
It just sounds dreadful, the idea of Star Trek on the stage.
You know, it would be worse if somebody got Bono and the Edge to write songs for a Spider-Man musical. Now, that would be terrible. I can't imagine anything like that happening.
So let's take a little break now, since you brought that up. we're getting off track again, but I've been wanting to ask you, how bad is it?
I bought the CD when it came out, and I have yet to listen to it.
Wow.
It was like, what, 2-3 years ago? I cannot bring myself to listen to it.
Do they sing on all of them, or what?
That's a good question. I know that Bono and the Edge are on that CD, and they're only on there just to sell that CD. But I don't think they're on every single song.
Yeah, I almost bought it from iTunes.
But I haven't even listened to the songs that they're on. The first time I have ever heard any material from that CD is when the You Talking You Two to Me guys played excerpts of it. That's the only time I've heard anything off that CD.
And how did they feel about it?
They had some good and bad things to say about it, kind of what I expected.
Because I saw Bono do a clip of it on American Idol years ago, when American Idol was actually a halfway decent show.
Yeah, I saw that too. And I also heard the stars of the Broadway show perform a song at the Tonys. But it was a ballad or a love song or something, and it really didn't appeal to me. I didn't think it was that great.
So how bad was this show?
I don't think it was all that bad. I mean, it wasn't a total bomb, and it did last for a while.
Yeah, now it's in Vegas.
But when I first heard about it, I thought it had to be an April Fool's joke, even though it wasn't April 1st. It had to be the Onion had invaded a news site and posted this somehow.
Yeah.
And then when it actually happened, it was like I was in denial. This can't be happening.
Yeah, they really put all their feet into it, and they really wanted to hype it up, both the Edge and Bono, and nobody seemed to like the music, but like you said, they seemed to like the staging of the show. And then the person that was directing it, she was a famous person.
Yeah, Julie Taymor. She directed The Lion Across King the on Broadway.
She did Across the Universe, too.
Yeah, that's true. To bring it back to the Beatles, she did the Across the Universe movie.
She left in mid-production or something.
Yeah, they kicked her out because she had really bizarre ideas. She didn't even really care for Spider-Man. She wanted to bring in this villainess called Arachne, and she was more interested in the Arachne character, and so the second half of the show was all about Arachne.
Wow.
That sounds like I just said it. The second half was about her acne. No, the second half was about Arachne. There's a book called Song of Spider-Man, written by Glenn Berger. He's the guy that wrote the book, the Broadway book, meaning the dialogue.
Right.
And so he gives an insider look at the creation of the Spider-Man musical. And the book's pretty cool. And I especially like it because he met up with Bono and the Edge, so he has Bono and the Edge stories along with tales of putting Spider-Man together. And it was just a cluster from beginning to end. And I still am in denial that two guys from U2 are part of that debacle.
Well, it's in Vegas now, like I said, so that's, I don't know if that's good or bad, but it still has a life. I might have to check it out. I sampled some songs on iTunes that I wasn't really impressed with, but I want to like it because it's who it is. I want to like it, you know, I want to get behind it. Like, but if you're the biggest U2 fan I know and you haven't even listened to it.
I can't bring myself to it. I'm just in total denial. It's like the last people I would think would be involved in something like that would be Bono and the Edge. What do they know about Marvel comic books?
Well, apparently they're fans, they claim.
Yeah, now. The only reason they got into it was because of Julie Taymor. Because they were fans of Julie Taymor, and Bono is in Across the Universe.
Oh, to bring it back to the Beatles. Yeah, that's a good point. All right, we're digressing before we turn this into a YouTube podcast.
No, actually, I take that back. They originally approached an Irish director, and I can't remember his name. It's not Danny Boyle. It's the other Irish director.
Mickey is trying to think of Neil Jordan.
And he was going to direct the musical. And then he backed out because he just couldn't get into it, because he's not into comic books either. But he was the one that brought Bono and the Edge on. And then they gave Marvel, or the producers, I don't think Marvel was involved that directly. The producers approached Julie Taymor because she had been so successful with The Lion King. And because of Julie Taymor and Bono's relationship, they decided to stick with the project. That's the behind-the-scenes story. There, I got my order backwards.
We've heard nothing but horrible things about it, but I did hear a good review on Sirius. They liked it. I can't remember who it was now, but remember them saying they were huge. Obviously, they're huge comic book fans. They kind of enjoyed it. Thought the special effects were cool. Yeah. Well, down the road, I may still buy that album just because of who it is.
Yeah, then you can tell me what my CD sounds like.
Spirits of Ancient Egypt. You already?
Oh, yeah, that's right. We had an album to review. I forgot.
Yeah, we went into a mini app there, so... Spirits of Ancient Eve, what'd you think? You kind of already said a little bit, but give me your full-blown review.
I like the chorus, but the lyrics are just really stupid.
You're my baby, and I love you, and you can take a pound of love and cook it in the stew.
This is a Denny Lane song. Did that do anything for you?
Well, he sings it. He didn't write it, though.
Well, I know, but...
Paul even knew how dumb this song was, so he said, here, you sing this. You stand in front of the microphone or behind the microphone and sing it. I'll be back here in the shadows.
Well, I wrote down, Denny sings, it's finally a band. I kind of like this song. I think it's a good rocker. Paul does harmony, and I like that because I'm your baby. I like that. They sound good when their voices are blend together. This is two songs blended together. It's gotta be, because it's so, like you said, so crazy. I don't know. I like it. I've always kind of liked it. But I am very biased, so that's probably why.
This is another song where I did not care for the studio version, because I didn't like the recording of it. It's got way too much echo on the guitar and the vocals, the background vocals.
Yeah.
I don't really care for that droning guitar in the background either. That kind of got on my nerves halfway through the song.
So you like the live version maybe better?
Mm-hmm.
So you can tolerate it on the Wings Over America album.
The lyrics are still stupid, but I can tolerate it.
Medicine Jar, Jimmy sings on this one. What'd you think?
It's a good song, too. I mentioned this during, was it Ram or McCartney?
Yes, I think it was one of the two, yeah.
Yeah, there's another song that kind of has this same basic rock groove. And they remind me of each other. It's kind of hard to get past the irony of the fact that the guy singing the song died of a drug overdose.
And I was going to mention that, but yeah, you brought it up.
It's really hard to get past that.
Yeah, it's an anti-drug song, and then a couple years later, he dies from a drug overdose.
Yeah, I think it was 4 years. I read it was 4 years. But it's a pretty good message. I like the... I mean, obviously it's a good message, but I like the way it's expressed. It's kind of catchy that way. Memorable. You won't get far sticking your hand in the medicine jar.
Yeah, I like the dead on your feet chorus there. That's good. It's got good guitars, good drums. It sounds great. Harmony is pretty good. It sounds like Paul and Linda doing the harmonies.
Probably.
It's a good rocker, and it is an anti-drug song. I like that, too. In the guise of a rock and roll song, I thought that was cool. About 14 years ago or 13 years ago, I was at a bar. We were sitting there having a couple beers, and all of a sudden, the bar band goes into this song. And nobody else in the audience, of course, knew it. I'm on my feet screaming, you know, wow, you're doing a Wings song. It was very strange, but they did a good job. And after the show was over, I find out that they're huge Paul McCartney fans. So that was cool, too. This is a cool song. I like this song a lot. Call Me Back Again.
1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3.
What'd you think?
I like this one, too. It's a really strong soul song.
It's got the horns in there again that you like, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the horns work here really well. Great vocal, don't you think?
Yes.
This song just sounds great. And when he just rips into that, but I ain't never, you know, he just sounds great. He's using his rock voice again. I'm glad that's back a lot on this album. Yeah, he just kind of throws it down and he swings for the fences. I think this song is awesome. The vocal really, really makes this song. Piano, horns, they're all good. Guitar is great. The Ooh Baby at the end and the long fade out, which is kind of cool too. I thought that was awesome. Yeah, this is a great song. Did he do this on Wings Over America?
Yep.
Well, I'm going to have to listen to the live version then.
Yeah, I said, pretty much this entire album is on Wings Over America. That's why I expected to like it so much. And I didn't expect to need to listen to it that much either. I figure, oh, I know these songs.
Yeah, they are quite different. So now we're into the very blatantly true pop song on the album, which turns out to be the big hit off the record.
Yeah.
What'd you think of Listen to What the Man Said?
Hey, man, really nice to have you back here, man. Yeah, all right, yeah. Hey, man, good to have you down in New Orleans, man. Yeah, well, it's really cool. Dr. Stanley's regards. Leo, yeah, man. Leo wish to be remembered to you. Yeah, all right. Leo, no, can't tell it.
I like the song, but it's definitely produced to be the single because it sounds really slick. And that kind of was a distraction for me, the production of it.
It doesn't really fit with the rest of the record, does it?
Yeah, you're probably right. It is kind of glossy.
I just think it sticks out because the record is really it's a rockin' album, and then you throw this song in, it's like, well, what happened here?
Stick it up in your butt.
This song was a huge hit. I think it was a number one. I like the song, but I mean, as a whole, with the rest of these songs on this album, it does stick out. Yeah, I think the lyrics are pretty good, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
I wrote down this as a perfect song. When I say that, I think it's a perfect pop song, which he writes very well. There is some kind of horns in there that sound great. It stays in your head forever. This song, once you hear it once, you're never going to stop thinking about it. The wonder of it all, line reminded me of the Beatles. But what I like the most is that acoustic guitar fade out at the end. I thought that was really cool. Then the horns come on, the drums are there. I thought that was really cool. Like I said, I like this song a lot, but when you listen to the rest of the album, it doesn't fit with the feel of the rest of the record. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised there was such a break between Call Me Back Again and Listen to What the Man Said. There's a couple seconds of silence, and the other songs are packed so tight together.
Right.
And you're mentioning that the song doesn't fit makes me wonder if that's why they put such a big break between Call Me Back Again and Listen to What the Man Said. Maybe they were aware of it, too. So they put a huge, quiet buffer between the last song and this song.
Yeah, I mean, I could just see somebody in the 70s, they're rocking out this whole record, and then this comes on the headphones, you know, as they're smoking some weed or something, and they're like, well, where did this come from?
Yeah, somebody changed the radio station on me.
Yeah, it's just it's a classic McCartney song. So I'm not gonna say that I don't like it. I mean, I love it. It's classic, but it just doesn't fit with the rest of it. Now we get into the two punch nostalgic at the end that he does occasionally. Treat Her Gently, Lonely Old People. What'd you think?
I like this song.
Treat Her Gently.
Treat Her Gently is so short that it's kind of forgettable, but I do like Lonely Old People. I'm just kind of curious why there are two people, why they're lonely. I mean, there are two of them. Why are they lonely? Don't they have each other?
Well, they do, but they don't have anybody else. They don't have any family, apparently. They're growing old gracefully together. You know? I don't know. I wrote down, it's a very pretty song, and I love how it fades. Listen to the Man Said fades right into this, to the Treat Her Gently part, and I thought that was cool, too. I like when he kind of looks ahead and waxes a little bit. I thought that's always cool from him. It's really, actually, you know, I don't know, maybe I'm a wimp for saying this, but it's really a beautiful, beautiful song. I mean, both of them. Mm-hmm. And only Paul could do something like this. And what's heartbreaking is when he says, nobody asked us to play. That's so sad, you know. The guitar there is cool. The line where he goes out of breath and old people here, he says, and then out of breath, and then he goes, yeah. I think this is a really good ending to this album, even though this doesn't fit with the rest of the album either.
Yeah.
But I think it's a good way to end it. What'd you think?
No, I like it. I like the melancholy feel of it, and it's also sad that Paul and Linda weren't able to grow old together.
Oh, that's...
Or as old as they would have liked to have grown together.
Yeah, that's terrible right there. Yeah, I think that, but it's just so pretty. It reminds me of a little bit of Backseat of Her Car, the Backseat of Your Car song from Ram.
Yeah.
But I think this song, these two might be better. You probably agree with that, because I don't think you like that song too much.
Yeah, you're probably right. I would prefer this song than that one.
So this was a huge hit. This album was a number one here in the States.
Hey, you forgot Crossroads.
I didn't listen to that because that's part of the remastered version.
No, it's not.
Yeah, I didn't think it was on the actual album.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Really?
Yes.
Well, I didn't play it. What'd you think?
Well, there's not much to it. It's the theme song to a British nighttime soap opera. And people thought it was very strange why Wings would suddenly kick into the theme song to a TV show at the end of the album. But Paul was saying that Crossroads is the kind of nighttime soap opera that two old people would be watching. So he figured, you know, they're lonely old people growing old together, just sitting back watching TV. So that's how the album ends.
Wow. Okay. Well, I'm going to go back and check it out now. I didn't think this was on the original release. That's why I didn't hear it. The deluxe edition that was remastered several years ago has a ton of bonus material on the second disc.
Yeah.
Which I didn't listen to.
This Venus and Mars set is definitely the one with the most bonus material on it.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. 14 songs.
And so he was very prolific during this, stage. And some of these songs were released singles.
Yeah.
So it's not like these are outtakes and alternate versions. These are released singles with the A-side and B-side.
Well, Junior's Farm sticks out like a sore thumb. That was a huge hit for him. Mm-hmm. When we go back and when we get in after London Town, or before London Town, I think he released the Wings Greatest collection, which was a lot of the singles that didn't make it to albums. So maybe we can go back and listen to some of the Wings' greatest, because there's a lot of songs there we haven't really covered.
Okay.
Junior's Farm is one of them. The Junior's Farm is a great song, but we'll talk about that down the road. But just quickly want to mention the McCartney collaboration with Kanye West, and I hate to say that, and Rihanna. Apparently that is racing up the charts, and it's his first charting song since the 80s, since Spies Like Us charted.
Oh,
whenever that came out, I think it was 85 that came out. I mean, obviously Paul's had number one albums since then, but he hasn't been on the charts in a very, very long time, but none of the old school rockers really have been. There was some big write-up about how it's cool to see him back on the charts. I don't know how much he had to do with this writing of the song, and it's kind of sad to think of him playing with those two people, but he always wants to be relevant to the young people. And give that up, Paul. You don't need to chase fame anymore. You already got enough of it. What was I going to say? Oh, I heard this morning I went online on YouTube and heard a clip of him doing 8 days a week in concert in 2013. Have you heard that?
No.
Yeah, it's interesting. Go on YouTube and check it out. It's cool to hear him do the lead on that. But it's a little out of his range now, because we've talked over the last couple of weeks about how he can't sing the songs like we want him to sing anymore. Because the next song after that he does is Save Us off the last album, New. And that's a real rocker, and he sings that flawlessly. So it's just crazy how he can sing one song not so great. It wasn't bad. It just wasn't great. And then rip into another song and it sounds awesome. It's just weird, man. This is really weird. But check that out. I'm curious to see what you think. Wrapping up the show, I just want to mention that John Lennon was with May Peng at the time that this album was recorded. And apparently he knew that Paul was in Nashville, because some of this album was recorded in Nashville.
New Orleans.
New Orleans, yes, you're right, New Orleans. So he knew he was there, and he was considering going down there to write some music with him, I guess. But, of course, that never happened, because he reunited with Yoko Ono, and let's face it, Yoko's anti-Paul, so that collaboration was never going to happen when the two of them got back together, which is pretty sad.
Yeah, I kind of don't think it would have happened anyway. I don't think John would have been all that gung-ho to try and catch lightning in a bottle again. So I think he might have just been saying that he wanted to get back with Paul to write something.
Yeah, John was...
I have a feeling even if John did show up, he might have jammed in the studio with Paul, maybe, but I really doubt if they would have written a song together. It just seems like too good to be true.
I guess they did do a little jammy with Harry Nilsson, right? Back in and when he was in L.A. living with May Peng, they did a little jamming with Harry Nilsson in some studio when John was trying to record the rock and roll album.
That's right. Wasn't that the one where everybody was so wasted they couldn't record anything, you know, proper? It was just this rambling jam session. I think Paul was on drums, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think he was on drums, played a little guitar, and they listened to it the next day, and it was terrible.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's... They had a real strange relationship in the 70s where they would see each other and have a good time, and then the next time Paul would call him up, he'd tell him to F off, and, you know?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
John was just... He was a strange dude there for a while. I don't know if it was the drugs or what.
I think it's just a personality thing. He's mercurial, so I think it's just that.
And then he goes and releases Double Fantasy there at the end, which is a very kind of McCartney-sounding album.
Yeah, John had some excellent songs at the end.
Yeah, that was a really... We might have to do that album down the road just to, you know...
I know you're going to have us review all the solo Beatles stuff. I just know it.
Yeah,
looking forward to it, but I know it's going to happen.
Well, like I said, we can't do Ringo. There's a lot of Ringo stuff, but George has got some good stuff, but he's had some rough stuff, as we talked about off the air.
So. Yeah, I just saw an article about who did the best Beatles solo album, and the guy said that it was All Things Must Pass.
Yeah, a lot of people say that. Yeah. Do you agree with that?
I don't know. I have not heard the whole album, even though I do have a copy of it, an HD copy of it as well. It's got some great songs on it, but I think it's just too big. It's got too much filler on it too.
Yeah, the second half is mostly instrumentals.
So I think that's a demerit. I think you could call that a demerit. But then again, I don't know. I haven't heard the whole thing.
I'd have to say the best Beatles solo album is Band on the Run. But that's just my opinion.
Yeah, it'd be hard to beat.
Yeah. All right, so overall, we think this is a thumbs up, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so check out Venus and Mars. It's worth your time and listen. And check out Who by Numbers. That's my other recommendation. I'm really getting into that record. It's really good.
Oh, all right.
Imagine a Man is awesome, and How Many Friends is awesome. The Slip Kid, I think that's the first song. That's good, too. Check that out, too. We might end up having to diverge into some Who later on the podcast, because I think they need more respect. And more recognition. They're a fantastic band. They're just as good as freaking Led Zeppelin, man. And they were the first ones that... Weren't they the first ones that trashed their instruments, for God's sakes? They deserve some cred for that. they can rock, man. And in a couple weeks, we're going to do Empty Glass. So that's a Pete Townsend solo record. Tell everybody where to find us.
You can catch us on our... A rarely updated blog, our intermittently updated blog at thelongandwinyshow.com. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/longandwiny or twitter.com/longandwiny. And you can email us at podcast@thelongandwinyshow.com.
All right, so that's the other edition of The Long and Winy Show, the Venus and Mars edition. Come back next week. We're doing Wings at the Speed of Sound. We'll see you next week. Take care.
Space clear.